Hello and welcome to episode. Oh, what is it? Episode
Five.
six. Oh, it's episode five. Okay, all right, let's try that again. Hello and welcome to episode five of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. Yes, I'm sorry, you've got Dan as the main host this week, but I am still joined with Paul and I am also joined by Sean. Say hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
Never gets old, that one. Just a little intro to the interview today. We're just going to introduce who our actual guests are this week. They are three very talented people. We're going to start off with Christine Szabo. Now, she, you may know her from a film called Bad President. It will be airing at the Cannes Film Festival this year in 2020. And hopefully it will get some distribution after that, should it be successful. If you don't know her from there, though, you might know her from People Magazine Investigates, where it was a series of murder mysteries and different things that have been dramatized for TV. If you don't know her from that, you might know her from Gibberish, which was like a short mini-series about a world where adults all speak different languages and they can't understand each other and it's all gibberish. And two people find each other and sort of strike up a new friendship. So those are the three things you might know her from. Then you've got Jen Wakefield. Now, Jen, you may know if you're in the UK, if you were watching Channel 4 a few years ago for Riot Girls, which is like a prank show, but it was with an aim to highlight feminism and the role of women, certainly in comedy, which is kind of helpful in the title of our episode this week. She's also a writer, and she has commissioned several sketches for the well-known BBC children's TV show Horrible Histories, and I absolutely love Horrible Histories. If you've heard any of my Temporal Trek podcasts, I've sneaked in a few little clips and nuggets from that TV show as well. Absolutely love that show. And if you might have seen her on the Asian Comedy Network as well, doing some of her fantastic stand-up. Anyone who goes to Edinburgh Fringe may have seen her in Girl in Dark Corner, where she played many characters and it was absolutely fantastic. Then you have Vicky Sargent. Now, a bit of nepotism on this one. She's actually a family member, married in, but so I've pulled her in. And you might recognise her from her YouTube series, Dressing Gown Diaries, her podcast, Piddleton FM, and also from Edinburgh as well, where she was working with Jen for Jekyll and Hyde, Sketchy Mother Pluckers. Better be careful how I say that. And One Woman Army, her one woman play. Fantastic, three talented people here, and they had a great conversation. So without further ado, I guess we go into it. Welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order? Ah, I see. Special it is. We'll be there to deliver ASAP. Cosmic Pizza Podcast Special Delivery. Hello and welcome to your special delivery from the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. I'm Dan Hitch, your host, and with me today is not Paul and Sean, but the pizza company have sprung for some new staff, and I am joined by
Christine Szabo,
Jen Wakefield,
Vicky Sargent.
Right, you've all been through induction training, so we've got you the basics. But we're just going to stick you in the kitchens first, you know, see if there's any conversation. Just work as a team. This is a team building exercise, okay? Right, we are here to serve you a special slice of life by interviewing these lovely people who have agreed to be on our podcast. They're going to be talking about their careers in comedy and performance and how funny they are. And I'm going to shut up and then just let them go. But firstly, we are going to set the base of our pizza. Now, I just want to get an idea of your backgrounds, where you currently are in your career, where you're recording from, where you're actually Skyping in from, and how our audience might know you. So starting with Christine.
Well, where did I get my start? I've been doing this my entire life, but no, I started this about 2 years ago, about two and a half years ago. I don't know. I enjoy it a lot. Where I am is people wouldn't recognize me from anywhere because I've done absolutely nothing. I am nobody right now, but
somebody to me, Christine.
One day I'm somebody to my kids. That's what counts. So, but yeah, I mean, the thing I've done to date, which is actually it's going to the Cannes Film Festival, is Bad President, which, as you can tell by the title, what that is about. Yeah, I did a film with Eddie Griffin, and that was just amazing. And then to have it go to Cannes, the virtual Cannes Festival, that is an amusing success that I enjoy.
Incredible. So that's all been delayed because of Cannes, or it was always in the pipeline and it's actually sort of on track of where it's supposed to be released? Or is that going to...
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they actually... it was planned to be released before the elections anyhow, but it couldn't have worked out better because he's already a giant dumpster fire. So
perfect.
This has just made everything that's happened making it even better. So I'm like, it's going to be bigger than, you know, you expect it to be. But yeah, I play his bimbo secretary. Her description was, looks like she could have been, she is a retired porn star. I'm like, what? What are you saying about me? I'm like, oh, okay, sure. I'm getting paid and I get to make a funny voice in it and not my own. So that works out great. But yeah, it's getting a lot of big stuff going on. Eddie Griffin is in it. Stormy Daniels plays herself in it too. So, yeah.
Stormy Daniels, I've heard of her.
She is, I don't know if she still is, but she was a porn star.
Wow, Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, that's Stormy Daniels. Like, the name sounds familiar, but there's a lot of people.
Now we've learned a lot more about Jen already, so.
Yeah, it was fun to work on it. I mean, the day I worked there, I only got to work with Eddie Griffin and Jose... oh, God, he's going to hate me if he ever hears this. Can't remember his last name. And then the guy who plays Trump, which I honestly can't remember his real name. I am name blind. I remember faces and not names.
We'll put it in post.
Watching them put the wig on this guy. And I'm like, oh, I want to punch you so bad right now. But no, you're not him. Oh, it was so hard not to just get out of my chair while they were doing the makeup and just laughing. Yeah, no, I loved it.
Jen. You're next. So what are you currently working on or what might people know you more from today?
Ooh, I'm very familiar with people not knowing me from anything, except being their teacher, maybe.
Hey.
Their former teacher. So I am still a drama teacher, but I left it for a while to do lots of different things. And I suppose a big part of my career was hidden camera comedy. So I think that probably is one of the main features. And doing pranks and stunts on members of the public. Maybe Riot Girls was like a known one, you know, sort of doing pranks and stunts in the name of feminism. And then more recently, I've turned more to writing. So I've recently written some sketches for Horrible Histories and for CBBC, and I'm just working on current non-commissioned, but just my current project is middle grade fiction and picture book text for children.
Ooh, very good. Is that working with Penguin? Because you did some sort of filming work or charity work with it? Was it with Penguin?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I have presented for. I've been a presenter for Penguin and Puffin, but I haven't actually had any commissions with them or anything. So no, this is just. It's one of those long form projects where there's no reward for ages, and you hope that something will come along at that stage. But I mean, the other one. The Horrible Histories and CBBC have all been commissioned and are going, which is cool. But that's currently what I've been doing mostly, is the middle grade stuff.
Incredible. Has that faced any delays as well because of COVID?
The CBBC and...
Yeah, filming of it or everything like that?
As far as I know, they were planning to film it in autumn, which could still be happening. And they did send me like the tapes of the girl they'd chosen and stuff, and they were doing all that virtually. So I think they were still managing to do some casting and stuff. But I don't know. Because I'm not used to being on this, the writer's side. So I was like, oh, can I come? And they were like, no. I thought I'd be able to be there. They're like, no.
Well, he's totally not performing my line right. I need to rewrite it and then give him the new script.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I'm at.
Excellent. Vicky, where are you at the moment? What might people know you from, and what are you working on?
I think everybody knows me. pretty famous.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, well, two people in this call know me, so
yeah,
I think
exactly.
That counts for these.
The most famous person in my life.
100% of this audience. 100% of my audience.
Exactly. Nobody knows who I am. I'm a writer-performer. I studied in acting when I was a bit younger, and then started writing my own plays and things because I wanted to be in something. So I thought I'd just write. So that's how I got into writing. So I did like my own one-woman show, and then got cast in a few Fringe plays, and then started doing comedy for the Edinburgh Fringe with Jennifer herself.
Yes.
So we came in together. So that's really where the comedy side of it started. So then did two more Fringes after that. The last one was like a comedy play, which I feel like I was starting to find my voice a bit more there. And now I mostly write with my partner in everything, Matt Mitchell, the one and only. So he's a filmmaker and a writer. So we write together. We're mostly writing TV scripts together at the moment, which we've been doing for like the last couple of years, desperately trying to get stuff picked up. And slowly but surely getting quite close to that, but obviously COVID has slowed everything down, sort of everything's ground to a halt. So mostly writing at the moment, because that's all we can do, which has actually been a bit of a lockdown blessing, because it's given us all the sort of freedom and focus time to write. So that's been quite nice. So mostly doing that at the moment, and hopefully doing some more performing once this all gets lifted.
Do you all feel that by having this break in COVID that it's helped you in any way, so creatively?
I think so. I definitely think so. It's helped you, at least for me, more on the act. I've always had an odd sense of humor anyhow. I'm very self-deprecating. So that's definitely helped me with this. But also, I think it's personally just helped me in general with seeing people and things a lot more differently, because you're all at home, so you're seeing a different side of people on the internet. I mean, yeah, we were always on social media and everything, but it's strictly no communication besides that. So you're finding out who is fake, who's real, who's actually funny, and who isn't, you know, because some people can come off very funny, and it's just like you're trying too hard. Just stop. You know, the same people posting the same photos like it's something new just because they do a different background. I'm like, it's the same photo you posted the same time. Try something different. I've seen this 50 times before. So it's interesting for me because even on an emotional level, it's made a huge difference in how when we can finally go back out there, how I'm going to approach people and what I'm going to do for myself, because I know it sounds greedy. I come before, you know, these other people where I used to try to maybe impress other people a little more than I probably should have. Where now I'm like, you know what? Life's too short. I really don't care what anybody says. I'm still going to eat the whole pizza. Got it in there.
Yes.
I have no problem with that. And I don't care what you think. You know, I mean, there's a degree of you still want to have people be impressed by you, but in the same side you're just like, I'm too old to care at this point.
That seems to be a consensus, everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I love what you said about like the comparison thing. This is something me and Jane talk about quite a lot, and how that's basically all just rubbish, you know, what you see on Instagram, which I've really learned, you know, this year, I suppose, like how, you know, you sort of perceive someone's having this perfect life on social media, and then you actually hear their side of it and what their life's really like, and it's bleak and hard, but people don't post that stuff. But I think that's what's been nice about this, is that you have seen people being a bit more honest, because we're all in this kind of crappy situation, so everyone's sort of going, this sucks.
It's the closest to equity we're ever going to get in terms of all starting in the same place and then seeing what people can do with nothing.
Yeah, and like she was saying, is it's
going to the people are being more real with what they are. It's and because that would make a lot of people, even younger kids, kind of depressed that people on Instagram or, you know, Facebook, wherever, they'd always post the best parts of their lives, but you don't see what's behind the scenes. You only see the best part. And now people are getting that opportunity to post their vacation photos or the best times of their lives. And it's actually, I think, more comforting for everyone to see, okay, this person's normal. Just like you and me. Well, my idea of normal is not normal, but
it's like for everybody to be as miserable as you are, and then
it makes me feel better that we're all miserable. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Equality in Misery. Thank you. You've just given us a title for this episode. Brilliant. Yeah, that's it. Welcome to Equality in Misery. Right. Well, actually, that's a great highlight into our next part, the cheese factor. We're looking at our careers, our highlights, sort of favourite moments first. But you know, you were just talking about posting on social media and sort of posting the best of your life. Let's do that right now. And then we'll get to the bad stuff after that. But what have been your personal career highlights so far, starting with Christine?
Personally, it's even, I mean, besides doing the Bad President thing, which I mentioned, because I love to do comedy. I love to make people laugh. It's just the small things I've done internally, honestly, with myself, even before this, just finding ways to grow into, for acting, you know, in comedies or dramas or whatever that I'm trying to do, is just being more real with myself and not having that fear. Because I used to have this weird fear where, like, oh, I really want them to like me. Now I've gone into auditions and I'm like, I don't give a shit if you like me. I'm doing it the way I think it's supposed to be done. If you don't like it, then I don't really care, you know? Yeah. So for me, that's kind of been a highlight for me, is I just really stopped caring. I'm just going to be true to what I think is correct. And
that's very freeing. It's like a freeing feeling.
Mm-hmm. You don't feel the anxiety from it, you know?
Yeah.
And that makes a huge difference, I think. But I think, I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but, like, I think a lot of comics have anxiety and, you know, they always want, you know, kind of like the pat on the back, but if you don't get it, you're like, what did I do wrong? Even though you did nothing wrong, it's that little thing, you got that... We're all a little bit socially awkward to begin with. So it's kind of nice to be able to have that, oh, I just don't care anymore. You know, that kind of.
Do you feel that comes more from sort of your background? You're more improv, aren't you? So your background is more with improv. Do you feel that because you've lived in that kind of improv world, it makes it easier, gives you that tool set to get past that?
Oh, yeah. That was huge. When I first took my first improv class at UCB, it was... kind of scary, but it was fun. But then you have to starting to learn all these different rules, and then you're thinking too much and you almost just get stuck inside your head, which is the opposite of what you're supposed to do. So then there's like this light bulb moment where I'm just like, oh, okay. And it was just, it's almost automatic where I don't hesitate in what I'm thinking. I'm like, I like how that's, you know, you just respond just like we're doing now. This is improv. It's just, it's a real life version. And people are like, I don't know if I could do improv. I said, do you live? Like, yeah. I'm like, well, you're doing improv every day. It's just, there's something funny in everything you do. There's, you know, the comedy is in reality. So you just have to play to that knowledge of it and enjoy it where you find humor in life. But yeah, I think improv has definitely for me been a huge, actually, thank you for saying that, a huge highlight for me, because it's made me more comfortable with myself and my thoughts, which, being comfortable in my thoughts is an interesting thing in itself.
Well, I mean, that could be therapy in the next episode. I'll call you back next week and we'll just do that. That's fine. Jen, you've sort of gone away from improv and more into a half scripted, half improv, because you've done the prank show where you must sort of come with a nugget of idea, but you still have to react to the situation. But you've also done a scripted thing, you know, in both plays and stand-up, I imagine, is all scripted as well. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, about improv or about being scripted or
improv, scripted, whichever one you feel best suits you.
In jumping in on the improv thing, yeah. I mean, I had a love hate relationship with improv, probably because of exactly what you're saying about the being too much inside your head, and I feel like I never mastered that, but I would master it like on week one and week seven, and then on week 10, I'd be back down in the hole again. And I never knew whether I was doing a good job or not. Like, I'd go on and absolutely think I bombed it. And my teacher would be like, that is the best you've ever done. And I was like, what?
You're like, really?
Yeah, exactly. So I totally appreciate the role it played in my comedy development, though. And in terms of maybe my freedom of thought, my ability to connect different ideas, I guess it's a basic thing to say, but confidence, you know, because you aren't thinking so much, you shouldn't be in your head so much. And so those feelings of success that you can take out of the improv class and bring with you in other places, that kind of lived on in different ways inside me, I'd say, if that's fair to say.
Makes sense. Would you say that those moments led to your sort of career highlights, or do you feel that having that surefire plan, that planned script in your head, gives you a more sense of achievement, maybe?
I don't know. The moments, whatever led to anything, just always just a big, massive combination of so many things, you know, because as, you know, everything I did, when I first started out, basically, I kind of wanted to use comedy as a vehicle to let me do other things. And so, although I love comedy, it's not the only thing I love. I'm a real, like, jack of all trades. So, like, when I started, I was doing radio. I did community radio for ages because I wanted to be a presenter. And I still, you know, I did that. And, you know, did improv, did sketch comedy with Vicky, did, you know, solo comedy. So being able to express comedy basically was a vehicle to go, here's my voice and here's what I've got to say. And it also was great. The fringe benefit of that was that I had something I really wanted to say, that people can sometimes get affronted when you talk about race or identity or anything. And so the good thing about comedy was, like, I was able to express that in a way that sort of took people's barriers down and was like, actually, this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it in this way, and this is for comedy sketch, or talk about the pros and the cons. And that allowed people to sort of go, okay, that's what she's about. And I think, you know, I hate the word brand. I hate it, but it is kind of, it helps you to build your, oh, this is what she's about. And then that's when people go, we need someone who fits that, and that person fits this, which is also the pro and the con of being whatever this brand might be, because then you get shoved into that box and you can't break out of it, kind of thing. But lots of things led to the career highlights. But one of my main career highlights was meeting Vicky Sargent and going to Edinburgh for our first time and doing our first ever show, which was an absolute hoot. That year, that foundation year of going to do your first ever Fringe, what the hell were we doing, Vicky?
I don't know, but we often reminisce. We talk about that Fringe more than any of the others, even though the others are probably more, quote, successful. That one's actually, I think, provided the most growth for both of us, personally and professionally. So we look on that with fond memories of, you know, crying into Chris before you're about to go on stage, you know. That's what it's all about.
In a nutshell, we performed more regularly to audiences that were the same size as our sketch group, if not less, and there are two of us in our sketch group. And there was vomit, there was tears,
there was screams.
Screams, there were tears, there was lots of flyering in the shitting rain. Yeah. And it was glorious.
It was wonderful.
My career highlight, basically. It genuinely was one of my career highlights. That was a good experience. That was it was a growth experience, but funny, fun. I think our friendship is going to be so unique because, our bond will be unique because of what we went through, I think, together in that.
Like soldiers, basically. Soldiers.
There's a bond at that point.
Yeah.
Sisters in arms, just, you know, exactly. Fighting together. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. That's a really good open discussion there. Now, okay, we're going to go for the sad stuff. We're going to go for the reality check. career upsets, times where you feel like you might have been set back for reasons perhaps outside of your control, or just in general, if there's been a harder thing for you to get through in your career? Christine?
Oof. Well, a while back when I was going into auditions, obviously when you're first starting, it's the fear of wanting everybody to like you, but I'd get to the point in the beginning where you could physically, and I couldn't hide it, shake while I'm in the audition. So I had to, that was a huge problem because you can see that on when they're filming. And, I just remember this one audition. I wasn't shaking when I went into it, and I had all the lines memorized. It was for an ID channel thing. It wasn't a huge thing, but one of those recreation TV shows where like a murder or something like that. And I just remember going into it, having the lines down, doing it the way that I thought should be done, and because that's what you're supposed to do, at least from my perspective. And I said every line perfectly, but then she's like, can you try saying that a little less like you're pissed off in that one part?
Oh.
So for some reason, her saying that, I literally blanked on half the stuff. What? And I'm like, I f***ed up so much. Where I went out of that audition and I went to my car and I just started tearing. Like, oh. I'm like, I screwed that up so much. I was, at the time, because I go back and forth to Las Vegas because I have a son in Las Vegas, so I go back and forth on the weeks I have custody. And I was driving back to Vegas and I was like in tears the whole time, trying not to crash, but just because it was that much of a, I can't believe I screwed up. I let that one little thing that she said to me mess with my head. But that one thing that happening, I'm so actually grateful to that, because that was really internally a huge moment for me, and that actually helped me so much. So I'm like, I'm glad that struggle and that upset happened to me at that moment in time, because I think it was needed for me to realize what I need to do next and change a certain thing. But it was just, I just know that's going to always be in my head. And if somebody comes to me at some point with the same kind of situation, at least I have that knowledge that I can give to them so they don't quit. Because this business, comedy, whether it be stand-up, improv, theater, on TV, you know, whatever, it's not easy. Everybody's trying to do it, and they're doing it in their own way and their similar ways. So it's a hard thing, and too many people give up when they're super talented just because one person said something that just, you know, took their whole world down. So I didn't want that to happen. And for me, it's like, because I've got kids, I'm doing this because I want them to see it doesn't matter what your age is, because I'm 40. It doesn't matter what age you start things. You can do whatever you want. I don't care if you want to be backpacking across the country, you want to be a garbage man, or you just want to live off the grid for the rest of your life. Just do what makes you happy, you know, because I tell them that's what my thing is I want to be happy and make people laugh. And if it took a 5-hour drive of me tearing up and feeling like I screwed up so much that there's never going back to change everything, I'm glad it happened. So,
Vicky, have you had a similar sort of moment like that where someone's just said that one thing that just seems to sort of cut through it?
Yeah, I can think of a very specific example, actually. And it's one of those moments I often replay to myself, like, when I'm rich and famous, I'm just going to laugh at this woman so much. And I already think, because I'm already like long over it. But when I was training, actually, I was auditioning for the next course up from the one I just completed, and having sort of spent a whole year getting my confidence really up, really high, after having kind of lost it after school and everything. And I was finally feeling sort of good about myself, and this was for acting. And I went to this audition, and they sort of asked me while I was in there, oh, why are you not auditioning for the next course up? So like the one above the one I was auditioning for. And I was like, oh, I just hadn't really thought about it. I came away from it, and I thought, oh, maybe I should have thought about it. And my friend had sort of said, all right, I'll try for the one above, and got in. And I thought, you know what, maybe I should tell them that I would consider it as well. And they might say, all right, yeah, we'll consider you. So I went to the woman who was running it and said, oh, I thought about it. I think actually I would like to try for the access course. And oh, no, it was like a 2-year professional diploma course. I said, I would like to try for that. And she literally took my arm and was like, oh dear, I wasn't offering you a place, right in front of my friend.
Ooh.
And, you know, after she kind of clearly had sort of hinted at that in the audition room, but then outside of it made me like an absolute mug. And like I was, you know, aiming way too high. And I was just like this big, yeah. like tiny immediately. And it just like destroyed me, absolutely destroyed me. And I remember coming home in floods of tears to my mum and to my brother the next day and all of that. But eventually I got over it and I did the course that I planned to do. And then I went off and did all the other things I've done since and made all of those has been teachers and administration probably very jealous. So I think the thing to remember is that when people have to say stuff like that was a complete sort of show of power on her part. That was clearly her sort of trying to find that power, trying to sort of tear me down a bit to make herself feel, you know, good about herself and her career. So now I can see that. And I can sort of laugh it off. But at the time, it felt horrible. So yeah, that was definitely a low point. But it's so true. Like, you need those moments. Because you're going to have those moments. You have those moments sometimes once a week. And you need to learn to sort of deal with them and be resilient against them, because that's really the key thing I think you need when you're doing comedy or any performing or anything like this, you know. Like you say, even being a garbage man, like, you need to have resilience to be able to carry on doing the thing you want to do. So, you know, getting through an Edinburgh Fringe, getting through a bad audition, completing a course, dealing with it when someone's just utterly horrible to you for no reason, that's sort of all part of the learning process.
Same sort of thing, Jen?
Yeah, a career low would be not one thing that anyone said, but just how I coped generally with, and I know, like, Vicky will know this because she sort of lived through it with me, but I think that, you know, that high of sort of when you have a bit of success can quickly be followed by a big dip. And for me, that was really true. I had a bit of success and I had got this agent that I was very excited about, and the reality of what I was going through at one point, I was just, everyone was like, oh wow, you're with this person and this is happening, and I was like, yeah, but, you know, actually I was really poor, I was really struggling to make my rent each month. I was just having such a tough time doing auditions. I was not enjoying gigging anymore. And that general feeling was just like so mismatched. I was constantly paranoid about my agent all the time, just thinking, because I was kind of like very bottom of her pile in terms of, like, not pile, she, not to do her disservice, but I think she did her best for me. But I think I just felt very like small because of her roster and stuff. And like, you know, it just didn't match. Something didn't match. So yeah, that was kind of a low period for me. And I had over that period developed insomnia. And you know, as all of us have anxiety, but the insomnia was pretty bad. And stuff like that. So that was a period of feeling like what actually, again, so mismatched with what people thought was going on, because what I was having, you know, I was still trying to post on Instagram. I was hating that whole thing of putting this face out. I was just speaking to someone earlier about how it's sometimes not so nice to always be the face of what you're doing, because you just don't feel like it's matching up with what you're having to put out and stuff. And I was feeling that quite chronically. But it was quickly, yeah, I thought I was going to have to exit for a while. But luckily I found someone new, like a new agent, and we matched well. And yeah, because of various reasons. But yeah, so that was a low period, I would say, of mismatching.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Dovetailing out of that, I'm going to go off script a little bit here.
Improv.
I'll go for it, firing away. See, this is the best thing about podcasts. There's no one to, like, tell you you're doing wrong, because, you know, we'll just edit out all the bad bits, so it's all good. So with that, and Jen, you were mentioning about having your face on what you're putting. You know, Vicky, you've done sort of YouTube, you've done the Dressing Gown Diaries and everything. Feel free to talk about that in a moment. But managing your social media presence, I think this is something that performers, you know, have never done 20 years ago, but now it seems to be almost second nature for the business. Do you feel that that has changed how you've approached your career, managing your social media profile, managing your face, basically, and matching it to the work?
Yeah, I find that sort of side of it quite hard. That's actually why I started doing Dressing Gown Diaries, because I was finding that the whole always having to have a full face of makeup and look amazing and be brilliant and funny and wonderful all the time, I was finding it really exhausting. And when I came to do my second fringe, and I sort of thought, you know, I want to go like the other way. I want to be like barefaced in my pajamas, just like completely me, completely authentic, like not trying to be cool, not trying to pretend that I'm out pulling boys and drinking all the time, because I wasn't. So I was like, I just want to be honest and authentic, because that's one of the most important things to me, is being authentic. So I was like, yeah, let's go the other way and do a show in my dressing gown where I'm just talking about my life. Not very funny, but it was true. Thanks, Jim. So then I started doing Dressing Gown Diaries because I'd always wanted to get into vlogging, and I thought, well, this could be a good combination of things where I can finally force myself to vlog, because the thing that put me off about vlogging was like, oh, I've got to have a full face of makeup on and I've got to have something wonderful and clever to say every time. And truth is, you don't always have that. But I felt like, you know, if I could just get myself doing it, then maybe some good content would come out of it. So I started doing Dressing Gown Diaries, where essentially I just lay about in my dressing gown and chat utter rubbish to the camera for 10 minutes and edit into something mildly consumable, which is what that is. So that's been fun. But even that, which is the most lazy form of like putting stuff out there I've ever done, even that's a struggle. Like, I haven't done one for a few weeks, partly because I don't feel like I've got the most important thing to say right now on social media. So I'm like, my voice doesn't need to be heard right now. But also partly because I am really like that lazy. So it is hard. I do find it really hard keeping up with the social media stuff. And it's so true. Like, when I'm posting stuff, I'm like, I'm just doing this so it looks good. Half the time I'm not actually doing the thing that I'm posting right then and there, but I'm just sort of showing off.
Jen, on social media, sort of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would just say, reiterate the same thing. You know, I think I was really on it for a while, and but that was one of my most anxiety-inducing periods of life, when I was sort of hanging on to see how many likes it had got, because I guess it does link to your self-esteem weirdly, but I also was thinking, I wonder how that person now feels about this picture because that's got this many likes. It was definitely an Instagram likes feeling in my head quite a lot. And like, I am on, and Twitter, I enjoyed using Twitter in Edinburgh actually, because that was a real experience of like retweeting reviews, and people actually came, like people from the industry came from seeing tweets and stuff. So that was quite an enjoyable experience of Twitter. But I feel like Instagram, I'm like, I don't put, like, since becoming more faceless and really enjoying this faceless thing, I've like hardly posted at all. Whereas I used to post like once every day, if not, you know, two or three times. And you know, I prepare, like, shoot photos, you know, and prepare it all and schedule it all in advance, knowing, you know, like a proper, so it's really changed. But I don't really enjoy that element of having to, again, I'm really enjoying having this faceless element, because I used to find that really exhausting and anxiety inducing.
Christine, you were always cracking me up with your tweets.
And a lot of times I used to try on purpose. I'm like, what's going to get people to look, maybe follow me? What can I say or do to shock somebody? And it did work for a bit, but I'm like, because I'd get private messages, whether it be on Twitter or Instagram, from just, as I like to call them, the gross douchebag guys with highlighted tips, armband tattoos, and Axe body spray. I just would get...
My time?
Yeah. The excessive amount of, like, douchebag. Not just even guys. There were some girls that just comments they made, and I'm just like, I don't want this kind of attention. Because this was back, like, 2.5 years ago that I was doing this. And so now I just, things that I enjoy posting that I find funny to myself, I don't even care if I get a like. But it's amusing when you just start doing stuff yourself that you think nobody's going to even like or anything like that. People will actually like that stuff more, just because it's honest. It's, you know, it's like, you know, it's, I think that's a pin post I have on Twitter is like, sometimes I have feelings and I don't like that, or I said something along those lines, and that got like the most likes I think
and I didn't, I think it was a 2 likes. So, you know, I'm doing good. I got 2 likes. But to me, it's just, yeah, I found you were one of them. Exactly. And I think I might've been the other one. I don't know.
You have to love yourself. You have to love yourself. It's true.
But yeah, like they were saying, it's really tiring to just like, oh, I got to put makeup on and take a photo of myself. It's just like, okay, I've got headshots. That's enough. I don't want to, I'm not out there having fun doing stuff. Most of the pictures you'll see will be either me and food or me sitting on my couch. That's legitimately the photos that are super exciting. That's, I don't have an exciting life. You know, I enjoy what I enjoy and that's it. But yeah, it's, I just really don't care. Cause I'm like, you know, if somebody's going to like something or not, they're either going to hate you or they love you. Either way, they're paying attention. That's how I see it at this point. So I'm not, I don't want, I don't care.
Well, so you've all had parts of your career that have been sort of behind the scenes. So, Jen, you've mentioned about writing. You've been able to step back. Obviously, you've done the voiceover work, Christine. And Vicky, you've done Piddleton FM. So you've had your sort of podcasting thing and everything. Do you feel that that is more freeing then? In line with what we just spoke about with social media, that it's more freeing to step back and kind of let the comedy do the work.
I personally need more attention. That's what I left doing a podcast, is it was not enough for me. that honestly, you're right there, guys. It wasn't enough for me, to be honest. I like, because I think because I like physically performing, you know, like whether that is in front of a live audience or on camera, like I feel like, you know, you can have so much fun using your body language, using your facial expressions to make something stronger. So I liked doing the podcast because it gave me a chance to like have a crack at loads of accents. But I think I would rather have been doing that as like a stage play or something, you know. I think I'd get more satisfaction out of the kind of reaction from that than from being behind the scenes. And even with writing, like, because I do mostly write at the moment. And I think some people think, oh, that's what you like to do now. And it's like, No, I'm just doing this desperately hoping that it will lead to me being able to perform. So I've always sort of done those background things as a way to sort of hopefully lead me to perform more. So yeah, performing is definitely my like first and foremost love, just because I'm a desperate, pathetic attention seeker. So my ego needs more than just being behind the scenes. Not that obviously being behind the scenes and writing isn't also incredible, and I do really enjoy that stuff. I just literally need to be showing off a bit more.
Desperate attention seekers. That's the second title for the episode. So that's good. We're spitballing. So Paul, when you're editing this, is going to be perfect. You've got a choice. There you go. Jen and Christine, any other thoughts on that? On sort of wanting to sort of step back and let the work speak for itself?
Yeah, I certainly am a fan of that. Yes, I am. Yes, that's what I'm aiming for. That's why, you know, I want to, yeah, I just feel like what I managed to do quite a few things that I feel like I've ticked now off a list in terms of being out there. And I don't feel the need to write. I don't know why, but I just don't feel the need to be out there anymore at the moment. So I'm quite, but I do still want to say things. So that's why writing is perfect. And, the CBBC, monologue I wrote was a great experience of proving that, because I had a couple of responses of like a couple of the actresses actually who auditioned for the part wrote to me independently of they didn't get the part, but they wrote to me and asked, like, one of them asked if she could use the monologue in auditions and things, which is really sweet because it's all about identity. So it's about, you know, part of it's about the growing up mixed Indian and English. And then what happens with that? And it's all about this girl getting a part in a Bollywood play in a school and all the funny things that the teachers say and do that are really token. And so she just said, like, it really spoke to her. And she said some of the funny things were some of the things that has sort of happened. So things like that, like, that gave me more satisfaction than I've had from anything for ages. Like, so that, for me, I was like, it was a great feeling that, because I was like, oh, I don't want to be in the front of the camera. I really have to be here to put it out there and for other people to consume that and enjoy it, basically. And if it speaks to someone, great.
Similar sort of feeling, Christine, with doing the voiceover work?
I liked doing that. I love doing voices, but for me, there was just something missing. Like she was saying, it's just, I'm kind of like the, love me. I want you to pay attention to me, whether you're laughing at me or with me. I just want, hey, look at me. Look, you know, we pretend like we don't want it. We really do. I mean, I wrote like a feature length comedy about 2 years ago, and I tried getting it out there. I'm like, oh, this is too much work to get out there. I know what I have is good, but I'll wait till the right time. It was nice to get my words out and be able to do that. It was very fulfilling. But there was just with the writing and the, not so much the writing, but the voiceovers, there was just something missing. I felt like it was just my voice. I wanted to be more than just a voice. I want to physically hear people laughing. I want to be able to I feed off of that. That's like pizza to me. I need it.
So good. Dovetailing there. That's very good there.
Yeah, I can always intertwine pizza and everything. I did like, you know, the little bit of voiceovers I did in writing, and I definitely haven't stopped writing because I like writing little sketches every now and then. Those are super fun because they're quick, but I still always want to perform them then. And then you're kind of like, I'm writing my stuff for me to perform. And that's kind of, I feel a little weird because it's almost, some people be like, it's very self-centered to write something for yourself. I'm like, I know, but I know me better than anyone. So.
And I'm amazing.
Exactly. I should be in everything.
All you need is a therapist.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I do, but that's okay. I won't.
Do people think that it's self-centered to write something for yourself to perform? Like, I've never ever come across that before.
I had a couple people when I wrote the script, they're like, who would you have in mind for this girl? It was the main female in it. And I said, well, me. And they're like, why you? Isn't that kind of, why would you want yourself in it? I'm like, because I wrote the character as myself. You always write a little bit of yourself into anything that you do, I think, personally. Now, obviously, you might not be a serial killer in something, but you're still going to write a piece of you in one of the characters, maybe. We are. You just don't know. I just thought it was weird that people, it wasn't anything that they actually physically said, but you could see it on their face.
Right, yeah.
And I'm not one to hide my reactions. That's another one I like to be on. I'm very animated.
Yeah.
And quirky, and just the way I'm Italian and Greek too, so my hands are always moving. I like slapping.
I only say it because there's two or three, maybe there's definitely two quite big women in like comedy drama. We, you know, that like Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Michaela Cole who came through by writing their parts themselves. And so that's actually a model that a lot of people I think follow. So I find it interesting that someone would be like, why? You know, because I would be like, well done if someone did that for themselves, you know?
And that's how I feel too. And I felt the people that gave me that kind of facial reaction or response was more like, almost like a little bit of a jealousy thing because it's something they didn't do and maybe they don't have the talent to do it. So in a way, I just kind of wanted to be like, you know, but I didn't because I'm in a social setting and I'm not going to do that. But, It's I always thought it was weird that people don't like you to try to make yourself the focus, even though they do the same thing, just on different aspects.
Absolutely. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. Maybe it's just a cultural change that, like, because I think Edinburgh Fringe is such a place where you kind of have permission to do that. You know, it's acceptable. So it's like, it's not weird, I think. But it depends, I suppose, if you were presenting in another setting, they might be like, that's weird, maybe.
And I think it might be, too, depending on who you're actually speaking to or who's looking at it. I think, and I hate to say this, but it's still true, guys are able to get away with making things more about themselves as comedians or writers than women. Women were looked more as it's a vanity thing.
Yes.
And not about being funny, that we're doing it because we want to be doing it, and it's not... It's more acceptable now than it used to be, but it still seems to be there's this slight favoritism towards it's okay for a guy to do that, but not a woman.
Yeah.
And not everybody's like that. It doesn't happen a lot, but I think it is something that's still, it should be the same kind of standards. If one person just let everyone be able to do it, you know, don't judge somebody by whatever they are. you know, you just let them be themselves and be happy, damn it, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, and that's beautifully dovetailed into my next question, actually. Like, do you feel that by being females in a performance art, that it's negatively impacted you at any point? Do you feel that now that, you know, the mood has changed, perhaps? You know, we're several years past hashtag Me Too. You know, do you feel that there has been any change, any progress in that department? Do you feel that being women has held you back still?
If I can just jump in there.
Jump in all we like, that's fine.
Jump in there. I feel it's really interesting you say that because comedy is quite full of people who are very liberal thinkers, I think. And so my entry into it was very like, you know, part of like Soho Theatre Young Company and stuff. They are very like, we are going to get voices that need to be heard. And so they champion people who need to be heard, you know. And so there's a lot more people. I mean, there's maybe on, if you look at their roster, they're still obviously white men performing and stuff, but they really try hard to make sure it's people who are maybe more in the margins or whatever, or who've got something to say that don't normally get heard. And then my first TV show was a feminist political prank show. So then that was all about feminism and stuff. So I was sort of launched into this world of like, is representing feminist issues. And so that also was like something that sort of you get lumped into, but obviously I did believe in it. But I did feel quite empowered. I know it was obviously there, the show was there and, you know, it had been pre-planned before I stepped into it kind of thing. But I did feel quite empowered being able to do that as a first job. But then by contrast, like, was in pantomime playing, I thought I was going to be playing like this sort of like kick-ass kind of character, because it was like, you know, I was going to be doing rap, and I was doing a bit of, you know, my character does rapping in my character comedy and stuff. And so, but then I was really surprised to be in this like really like little like corseted dress and be like, I was Princess Jill, and that was before on the other side. So, but of course, like, you know, pantomime is very sort of like heteronormative, classic characters. So yes, have been on both sides of that. And the script I found, you know, in Panto, it was a really good fun job, but I did find like all the guys got the jokes. A lot of the guys got the jokes and the gags. I had one moment which I desperately just tried to make, you know, I was like, I'm going to make this my one moment and make this funny. There was one opportunity and that was it. But the rest of the lines were very kind of functional to the plot. But then, yeah, by contrast, I've done some of the TV stuff I've done has all been about like my role in it, taking back the power. So I feel like there is a lot of what you call like a liberal elite in television, or liberal thinkers, especially in comedy. And I feel like I've been on the right side of that as well. But I can see how it plays out in other ways. You know, I mean, yeah, we're all part of this world as women, so I've seen how it plays out. I've had more comments, I guess, that have been questionable about like race type things and that kind of thing, rather than, you know, that's come to my forefront more than the woman thing. But maybe they, you know, they're interchangeable. They all come in things. You know,
did that come from the stand up on the Asian Comedy Network, the stand up piece you did there, or was that another project?
That was also a really cool project to do, because I felt like I was part of a tribe. That was quite nice. But just in terms of like auditions and things, I think, or you know, when people are producing, like coming up with ideas in production, it's like, could you play this? Could you do this? Are you this? Like, and it's always been because they're like not sure about whether I'm what my race is, and sometimes they're fine, and sometimes they'll say stupid things, you know. I felt it more then, you know, or when they've talked about something and I've been like the only person who's mildly brown in the room, and I'm like, oh, and I feel like I can't say anything, because it's like, it's just, you know, sometimes you just feel like you can't say anything because you feel like no, everyone's going to be like, oh, because they don't really get it or something, you know. Those things have been more prominent, I'd say, but I've obviously felt massively, you know, I understand the feminist fight generally, but that's my experience. So I just like to share that.
Any more to say on that?
I think it's more accepted now, honestly, than you know, even 5 years ago. I know personally, I like to describe the way I am with comedy sometimes. I'm a well-educated lady with the mouth of a sailor, because sometimes I will say stuff that guys love, and it shocks women because they're like, wait, why is she saying that? But I'm like, that's the way it is. That's the kind of, you want a little bit of the shock factor when you're doing it. I mean, I grew up around a bunch of brothers. I have two sons. And so for me, it's just kind of who I am. And I have a filter to a degree. I know in certain areas, you know, what not to say, but I think it's accepted, but it still shocks people. Like, especially when I did stand up, I talked about the one weird date I had that did not last very long, because the guy legitimately asked me if I would stick a hard boiled egg up my butt. I cannot make this up. And I'm like, well, I'm allergic to eggs, first of all, so that is not a possibility. But at the time, and this was right after my divorce, I was so lonely. I'm like, I actually sat there through dinner, awkwardly, ate my food, and then pretended like I had to go back home to get my kid because he wasn't feeling good. But I'm like, I was that lonely. But people were like shocked that I even said that. I'm like, I'm sorry. Dude, I guess that's a fetish now, too. Hard-boiled eggs up your butt. Last time I checked, I was not a chicken, but... And I legitimately have only asked one person out in like 3 years because I am very scared of what might be asked of me next.
Yeah. So, what other foodstuffs have to go up there? Yeah.
Because I'm okay with telling that kind of stuff, but you know, half the time you're either going to have people that understand it and get the joke about it, or there's other people like, why are you even talking about that? And those are the two different types. But yeah, I like it. It's a work in progress with me, but that's what I find fun about it. You never know what's going to happen, especially with eggs.
Well, I mean, now, you know, stick a 100-pound label on there and make it out of jade, and I'm sure a celebrity somewhere could sell that as part of the Goop network or something. Well, there we go. Well, I'm seeing that we're coming to an hour already, and I'm already apologising to Paul if he has to edit anything out, especially my voice. This has been fantastic. What I want to end on is where people can find you, follow you on social media, and are there any things that you're doing right now, perhaps charity work, or is there anything you want to promote, anything you want to plug right now? Starting with Christine.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at ChrissyZabo80. My last name is spelled S-Z-A-B-O because no one spells it right.
I watched 3 YouTube videos on how to pronounce it properly, and there's a Portuguese, Polish, and I think it was the British American version, and I was like, what if I get the right one? What's the right one? I can't tell which one.
I get so many different, I get variations that aren't even remotely close to my any letter in my last name. So I'm not really doing anything right now other than sitting at home and probably posting random Twitters or tweets and liking other people's stuff.
Did you want to go through Project Orphan?
Oh yeah, that ends today. It is, even if I don't go on, we're in the third round right now. Project Orphans is done by Voices That Give. If you look it up on Instagram, that hashtag, you can vote for me or any one of the other actors, singers. I think there's even one for comics, and then just fans of the Hallmark Channel. It's 100% of the proceeds and donations goes to Project Orphans, which helps orphan children, which are majority of them are actually African American and Hispanic, helps them, you know, give them a better future. So I said to people, I said, even, you know, if I don't go on, which I don't think I'm going to go past this particular round, still go on there and vote, because, you know, they're what we need to help out. They're our future, and they can only make things better.
Lovely. Jen, where can they follow you? What are you doing? If there's any upcoming projects you want them to keep an eye on?
Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JenDouble, JENDUBBLE. And yeah, I mean, I'm interested in writing projects. So if anyone's got anything they want to want me to write, then you can go, if you go on my website, which is jenwakefield.co.uk, I've got examples of like, I've got samples of like things I've been doing, and you know, people can read things I've written there before, read reviews of shows and see whether it's, whether I'd be a suitable writer. There we go.
Lovely, jumping. Really. Vicky, anything you'd like to plug? Where can they follow you?
Right, you can follow me on Twitter at Vix93, that's V-I-X-93, or on Instagram at Vicky Sargent, that's V-I-C-K-I-S-A-R-G-E-N-T. And nothing really major upcoming while all this is happening, but they can go back and, you know, relish in Dressing Gown Diaries, which you can find on my YouTube channel, which is Vicky's List. Or they can also go back, if they're really desperate, and listen to Piddleton FM on iTunes, PiddleTonFM. Enjoy.
No, it is really good. I listened to every episode. It's very, very good. Oh, it's that typical kind of British sitcom that I liked. You know, there's the one character who is like the only sensible person in the village.
Everybody and else just is nuts.
Everything else is destroyed around it. It's really, really good. If you do like your British comedy, obviously this is going to get posted Canada, the UK and the US, because we've got different people connected and we're bribing them and doing whatever we can to get this out. So brilliant. Yes, thank you so much. So our special is gone and there's no eggs in any unusual places. The grease in the box is cold and we hope you are filled to the brim. Please join us for more slices of life in the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. Done.
Speak over your ending there, Dan.
No, that's all right. No, that's fine. That's okay. This is all live, darling. It's absolutely fine. That's all good. No, thank you so much. This has been absolutely fantastic because we've been racking our brains on what we could do with the show. The idea is that it's just general discussion about any topic whatsoever, and everything that we started coming up with, because we're three white guys. We're three bald white guys. One's a Canadian, one's a Liverpudlian, and one is me. And every suggestion we would come up with is like, this is only interesting to three bald white guys. We need to branch out, guys. Think of ideas. Think of something different. And it's like, hang a minute. I know Vicky. I know Jen. I know Christine. Hang on a minute. Women in comedy. And I was like, yes, brilliant. Let's go for that. Because you guys have got so much. Like, reading through, because I did a little bit of research. I did follow you on a few things. And I was reading through everything you've done. And like, you all cross over in different ways because, you know, you've got complete improv with Christine. You've got Jen, where you had the Riot Girls, which I kind of saw as two things, like you bit improv, bit scripted. And then Vicky, you've got like, you know, one woman plays. You've got things where you are delivering the lines as you've written them. And I just thought it was a great sort of cross section of everything. And oh, brilliant. Thank you so much. You've saved my bacon. And whatever toppings I'm putting.
Thank you, Dan. Nice to meet you as well, Chrissy.
Yeah, lovely to meet you, Chrissy, as well.
I don't want this to be the last time. Maybe in a year's time we can catch up and then see where your projects are. You know, we'll do a Cosmic Pizza 2. We'll take on the temp staff again, hopefully without the COVID-19 going on.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Or whatever it will be next time. I don't know, but there we go. But no, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for doing this. It's been really appreciated.
No problem.
Thank you. No
problem. Right. Ah, oh, thank you. Right. Sayonara, live long and prosper. Love you all. Take care.
Well, that was a fantastic interview, Dan. I have to say, I'm a little bit jealous they were three fantastic women, a vast variety of, as you said in the interview, a vast variety of work that they've done and the way they approach the subjects. Absolutely fantastic. And I've listened to it two or three times, once obviously to edit it, and then a couple of times just to actually then listen to it, because editing it, you don't really listen to it. And they're absolutely fascinating characters. How do you know, obviously you know Vicky, because she's, like you say, your sister-in-law, and obviously through her friend Jen, but how do you know Christine?
Christine, we were both guests on another podcast, separate episodes, We both listen to the Star Trek The Next Conversation podcast. We're both Trekkies. And she was part of the sort of Facebook group, which have been a real big part of that podcast. And two guys on there wanted to start their own podcast about the fan base, which was also about a Star Trek podcast. A very, very meta podcast idea. But it would basically be people who were fans of the podcast getting together and just having a chat about what they are, who they are, why they're into Star Trek, and sort of, you know, plug their stuff. Christine was one of the earlier guests on that podcast. And then later they said, right, okay, anyone else who want to do it, put your hand up. I did that. Thought I'd sell a few books, so it's always helpful. And yeah, we were both on there. And then anyone who's been on that podcast is then in a separate group, like a little Facebook Messenger group, and we just all message every now and then. And basically, just following her on, you know, Twitter and everything like that, we sort of struck up a good friendship on, you know, all of her acting stuff. And, you know, ever since, we just sort of kept in touch. So it's really been a fun friendship to keep going.
Great. That's a podcast I'll have to... to listen to, I think.
It's very good. It's hosted by Matt Myra, the Next Conversation podcast, with Andy Secunda, who they're both writers in TV shows. Matt Myra hosted the Talk Trek show, which came out after Discovery from season one. He doesn't do it anymore, but he's still a huge Trekkie, and he knows Jonathan Frakes and all this sort of stuff, and he's had Jonathan Frakes on the show, and it's really good fun. But it's great. It's a complete rewatch of TNG, and they're deconstructing it as two writers for television. So there's a lot of inside baseball and really good sort of behind the scenes guesses of why they've done the things they've done.
After listening to to the three of them talking, obviously. About trying to get into comedy, and a couple of them have obviously only just started recently. Well, it makes me wonder, why on earth would anybody want to go into comedy, let alone women? I mean, it's hard enough for men, but then women come in and it's even harder for them because of the sexism that is, you know, prevalent through the trying to get onto the stage and what have you. Hopefully it's a lot easier now than I think it used to be, but even so, there's still a long way to go. But why would you do that? I mean, half the time it's so stressful, and half the time you're unemployed. I mean, you've either got to be very confident in your material or believe that you are good enough to do it. I mean, that's something I would have liked to have asked them personally, is to how far do they think they can go? Are they really confident about what they're doing, and can they take it? I mean, obviously, Jen's got into the BBC and done a little bit of work in there. It's hard work.
It really is. It really is. I don't know where it comes from. Just speaking to them, and they just seem to have that innate need. The same reason that I've spoken to other writers, actors, just anyone in a sort of a creative field. They always say that there's just that thing inside you that says you need to get this done. You need to do it. And they do. Vicky, being my sister-in-law, I've known obviously for a far longer. And, you know, she wasn't sure about what career she wanted to go through. She trained as a baker at one point. I was hoping to bring that up in the podcast, but it just never naturally came up. You know, pizza podcast, baker. I thought, oh, it's going to be great. But it never actually came up. But she was trying all these different things, but it never really rang for her until she took a few classes. She wanted to flex her acting muscles, and it just started going from there. But she soon realized that the opportunities aren't there. People aren't clamoring to get you into their show. And she had to start writing her own. She had to start writing her own plays. She then pulled on all of her previous experience in retail and everything to start writing. I think it was her first play was Bric-a-Brac, which is basically her as herself trying to get out of a dead-end job at a well-known supermarket that will remain nameless but begins with the letter S. And then becomes a writer for One Woman Plays. And from there, she just sort of carried on. It just sort of, once you get the stone rolling, you just keep on going.
Wow. Yeah, that's, you've really got to want to do it, haven't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At one point, Christine was saying about improv. And I've always thought improv is probably the hardest thing to do. I mean, you watch these panel shows and these people given a subject and off they go, and they're all absolutely fantastic at doing it, and you think, well, how can you do that? How can somebody say, okay, you're a 14th century peasant, and the king has brought an orange you've never seen before, and you know, go. What? I'm number what now? And you've got to think, I don't know history that well. What would be the first time I've seen an orange be like? And Christine said, oh, well, you know, it's just like talking to one another. It's just like a conversation. You do that. Well, no, I don't often go around talking about 14th century oranges, and I don't have much experience of it. If you want to talk to me about things in my life, like Star Trek and podcasting, I can do that. But, oh, no, improv, I could not do that. And you have to be yeah. like, you know, a person with multiple characters inside you. No, that's it's not as easy as she's making out. If it's easy for her, that's great. She finds it naturally, something that she can do naturally well, then brilliant. You know, go for it. But I could not do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, yes, it must be like talking. You know, you're making it up as we go along. We're doing that right now as we're talking to each other. We're just sort of figuring out, you know, where we're going. But we've already got an idea of the subject we're talking about, so we can kind of frame it in that. And, you know, improv is essentially the image I have of improv from all the American TV shows and things is just someone's just shouting out an idea from an audience and then they're reacting to it. It could literally be anything. And I don't know it. I mean, the job that I have down at the dockyard, every half term coming up or every summer holiday coming up, as you know, the kiddies entertainer that I'm often being, I have to come up with something new each week, each vacation. But I've got a couple of weeks to sort of get it straight in my head. You know, oh, I'm a pirate this week, so I'm going to have to make a piratey kind of story. So it kind of needs treasure. It kind of needs this and that. Or this week I'm a storyteller from, you know, ye oldie days, so it's got to have knights, it's got to have giants and all this. So I've kind of got an idea of what I'm going into, but she won't have that. She literally has maybe 5 minutes of prep time, and I know there are some rules that you can play to, you know, you never say no or something like that in improv, but other than that, that's just mind-boggling how you would do that.
Yeah, there's some good groups about there's a group of comedians that get together and do Pride and Prejudice, but like modern day version of it. I can't forget what it's called now. And they are good. You know, people will throw out, you know, ideas and they have to put that into a story, all around, you know, the people or the characters that have been in the sort of Jane Austen, ostentatious, that's what it's called. In the Jane Austen world. So yeah, that's always a good one. And you can hear them, you know, that they'll start a sentence and you can see them think, you can hear, well, because it's on the radio, you can hear them thinking at the same time. You know, you can think, I've got to get to this point so that, and then somebody else will jump in and go, you can almost hear the sigh of relief as they go, oh, thank goodness for that. They've come in and taken their little bit away. I think, oh, but yeah, that's always a good improv show to listen to if anybody wants to listen to it. Working at the Fringe, that's something I was going to ask about as well. I mean, I always used to think, not knowing anything about the Fringe and thinking one day I'll go up there. One day we did go up there, but we saw a couple of free shows that we went to, and then we saw a couple of comedians, that obviously well-known comedians. Milton Jones was one of them. And who is amazing. He's, my goodness, he does improv, you know, because he sort of improvs a show at the same time. Yeah, so he's got a show, but he's really sort of improvising a lot of it as well. I always thought you just go along, you know, as an actor or comedian or whatever, you would go along, you put your show on, and away you go. Without realizing that, no, that's not how it works. It's more sort of, you go up to the theatre and say, here's 10 grand, I need to put the show on. Then you've got to go out and sell the tickets and get all the flyers printed and put all of them out and try to drag people in to make the money. I had no idea that's what it was like. And it's incredible to see how many people are up there as actors, even street performers and everything like that, that are up there trying to be the next big thing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. We went up two of the three times that Vicky was up there. She was with One Woman Army and... I'm now blanking on the other thing she was doing. Oh, it was Jekyll and Hyde, the sketchy mother pluckers. Again, I have to be really careful how I say that. But that was their duo show. And we hung out with her while she was flyering, the kind of stuff she had to do. And everyone else is in the same boat. So there's so many people screaming at you, trying to, you know, come see my show. I'm really glad podcasts don't do that. But yeah, the idea that you have to put the money together first, which is at least 2 or 3 months worth of rent for, you know, the off fringe shows, not the big main central shows in the main town square, but the really far out venues that Vicky and Jen had to play. And it's just mind-boggling. And then you've got to make your rent. Then you've got to actually pay for a place to live, which might not be the best place for you, might not be the cutting edge of technology. I think there was one where there was a light bulb swinging from side to side, but there we go. And, you know, we fed her the week we visited because, you know, she has to ration down. It was like visiting a student again, you know, pack of noodles that has to last you a week. You know, it's that kind of stuff. But it's just, it boggles. Again, where do you find that motivation? It just boggles the mind.
It's, again, confidence in your ability and you know, a lot of luck. I mean, you know, you could be there the day that there's a big producer there and he snaps you up, and you could be there the day after the big producer was there and he goes and misses you. So one other thing, Christine's saying about her first trip out with a prospective boyfriend and him asking about eggs.
I love how Christine waited till the end of the interview to drop that one. hopefully not the egg being dropped. But just...
That was so funny. But what really cracked me up, if you pardon the pun, was the fact that she said the first thing that came to mind was that she's allergic to eggs. I mean, that's not the first thing I'd be thinking of.
That's her improv mind. Yes. That's it. That's where she goes. It's that she's she goes to allergies to eggs first. Nothing else is wrong with this thing.
I'm sorry, you can't put that up there. So I'm allergic to eggs. Have you got a banana?
If I'd got their permission beforehand, I wish I'd taken a screenshot, because at that point, both Vicky and Jen were like hands over the mouth. They can't do. They were just aghast.
Well, you could hear it. It took everybody by surprise. Oh, that was so funny.
Yeah. I had to literally take my headphones off and like move the mic away from my face, because I couldn't. There was no way you would have been able to hear her and me laughing at the same time.
I fancy a bit of editing in there. You won't believe.
I do apologize.
No, that's fine. No, it was so good. That whole interview was so good. Sean, have you got any questions?
No, you've pretty much asked all the questions that I would have asked as well. It was a great interview. Loved listening to it. Like you said, Dan, I think we should have them back in a year or so.
Definitely.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One thing I would like to say, though, is, Sean, I think we were shafted there, because there he is. Look at his face there. I had to look these people up. I didn't know. I hadn't heard of any of the three of them. I do apologize, ladies, if you're listening to this. But I looked them up and see what sort they did, and I watched a couple of videos and I saw Twitter feeds and what have you. Why does Dan get three gorgeous women to interview, and I'm stuck with a 58-year-old grey-haired, balding Canadian author, for goodness sake?
Them's the breaks.
Yeah, them's the breaks, yeah. Yeah. Do you remember, Sean, when he said to us, I'm going to interview these three girls, are you guys free on a Saturday? And we said, oh no, it's a bit awkward. Oh great, I'll that's not a problem. I can do that.
I remember.
Yeah.
Now we know why.
Yeah. We're definitely having them back next year.
Hey, that's it.
No, that was excellent, Dan. That was really well done. I was really pleased when I heard that interview, and I didn't edit anything out other than a couple of ums and ers, or coughs and what have you. Everything was left in there, so that's pretty much as it was. Anytime they want to come back on, if they want to come back on individually to say promote anything or talk about project they've got, absolutely, we can have them back on
for sure.
Excellent.
Anyway, guys, we've had our first email.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. That actually works?
Apparently. Who knew? Yes, a guy called Bill Lamond emailed. Now, unfortunately, it was a slight complaint. And I say that because he was complaining about the sound effects that I've been putting in, the crunching, chewing sounds, which... it didn't sit right with him. He Now I wish I'd made a note of this. He has a condition where certain sounds can, you know, you get those sounds when you scratch your fingernails.
It drives you crazy.
Yeah, it drives you crazy. Fingernails down the board. That really, really hurts. Doesn't it? A lot of people don't like that. Well, this has a worse effect than that. It's a really bad reaction he has to certain sounds. Unfortunately, the chewing sound was one of them. So he emailed and said, could we drop the sounds? Now, absolutely yes, of course we can. I must admit, I wasn't really happy with putting them in because A, they're awkward to put in. B, they didn't really add anything to the podcast. So from now on, they will be dropped and we'll come in with a little bit of music. So I'll try and find some musical notes to put in instead. Hopefully that'll be okay. But he did say he did like the podcast. We're okay there. Now, unfortunately, he did email in on the first episode, and obviously the last three episodes or so have still had the crunching sounds in. We're on episode 5 now, but from now on they will stop. So that's just to let everybody know that that'll be happening.
It's always great to get feedback, yeah.
It is always great to get feedback, and I don't mind criticism so long as it's constructive criticism, which is what his email was. So that's absolutely fine. If anybody else has any comments they want to make, anything they want to take out of the podcast, and not presenters, we will keep them in. we're not going to get rid of any of us, unfortunately.
They've just listened to a whole episode with me talking, so you know I wouldn't take it personally.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Get rid of that Dan. Oh, he's awful. Yeah.
Keep the women, but get rid of Dan.
Yeah. He added nothing.
One thing I would say, though, is we are three bald men with glasses of a certain age. We would not be opposed to having another host in here, maybe a female woman of the opposite sex type of host.
Very true.
A female woman?
Female woman, yeah.
Female ones, yep.
I like ones. When my women are females.
It does help. if there's anybody out there that we've got some ideas that they want to bring to the podcast, we could discuss from the point of view of not three bald white men with glasses, that'd be great.
Okay. Right, I think that's us for the episode. I already wrapped it up in the interview because I'm that much of a professional. So I'm just going to wrap it up with saying bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
We've been your deliverers today. Please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries, rate and review our service. And we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr and TikTok. By searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you would like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us on cosmicpizzapodcast@hotmail.com, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.